Welcome to Raiders of the Lost Podcast, one of the fastest growing movie podcasts in the world, where we discuss all things film. On this episode, we discuss The Green Knight,
written and directed by David Lowery.
What is up, movie friends? Welcome back to the show. This is Anthony.
And this is James, and we just saw The Green Knight on Friday night and had a blast checking it out. It was such a phenomenal film, we had to do a bonus review on it.
It's a pretty wild movie. It's based on an ancient King Arthurian myth and a poem, which even J.R.R. Tolkien adapted into a short story. But David Lowery, the director, fantastic director. He made A Ghost Story. He made Pete's Dragon.
Ain't the Body Saints.
Jinx with Casey Affleck and Rooney Mara. Great movie if you haven't seen it. So super talented director. And he took a spin on this classic tale and brought about his surrealism, his great use of metaphors in his storytelling. And he really made it something of his own in this.
Yeah, A Ghost Story was a surprise movie for me when I saw it like 5 or 6 years ago for the first time. I've actually seen it 2 or 3 times because it just blew me away with the storytelling and the pacing and like the hypnotic dreamlike nature of the film. I think it's a hidden gem, and I don't think if you haven't seen A Ghost Story, check it out as soon as you can. Put it on your watch list. It stars Rooney Mara and Casey Affleck, and it tells a great story about grief and loss. But when I saw that, I was like, who is this director? Because I kind of went into it so blind. And now, every time Lowery comes out of the movie, I'm just so incredibly intrigued, not to mention that he's working with A24 on this film.
Yeah, and even Pete's Dragon is one of my favorite kids' movies of the last 10 years. It's really great, super underrated. And he seems to have this really great style that he developed on A Ghost Story, because Ain't Them Body Saints was very Terrence Malick-esque.
Yeah.
Very handheld and kind of like freewheeling camera work, whereas A Ghost Story and this film, The Green Knight, he seems to have tapped into what his artistic vision truly is. I think when you make a few movies, you finally kind of spearhead and figure out how you like to film. And I think he's reached that point in his career. And with this film, I think this film in A Ghost Story, he seems to be really interested in exploring death and life and the idea of spirituality, the idea of existence, of if it's infinite, if it ends or not. And this film explores those very heavy themes in like a great medieval-esque story that you typically see as this kind of story. You think it's going to be about this great extravagant hero who's going to, he's a strapping young lad, he's going to go on an adventure and slay the dragon.
He's got this big axe.
Yeah, he's going to save the princess and he's going to be king, but that is not at all what this movie is, and that's why I found it so refreshing.
Yeah, it's not a perfect film. It's at 89% on Rotten Tomatoes. Critics score 54% Rotten Tomatoes. Audience score,
really?
Which is really low, 7.6 on IMDb. I think the problem with a lot of people when they watch films like this is obviously we're living in the climate of Marvel and Star Wars, and boom, 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 you want action, you want fast-paced adventures. This is a very slow-paced film, just like A Ghost Story. Even Ain't Them Body Saints is a slow-paced movie. It's beautiful. Every shot of it is a piece of art, and the cinematography is fantastic. The colors, the wardrobe, the sets, every bit of this film is meticulous, incredible detail, and just so purposed in what they were doing.
And it's impressive because you can tell they didn't have much money to work with. A24 yeah. Always their movies always have pretty small budgets, and so this budget couldn't have been more than 20 mil. I would guess it's somewhere between 15 and 20 mil, and they really made it look a lot bigger than it was with the filmmaking. And I think what a lot of people wouldn't understand about this movie is, like I mentioned earlier, it's not a hero story. People might want to walk into this thinking it's a hero story, but it's not. It's actually about a very flawed character who maybe isn't who he's supposed to be. And Dev Patel gives a really terrific performance. He's a super underrated actor. I don't think many people have him on his radar as being a great actor, but I think he's top-notch and a first-class actor. And gives a phenomenal performance.
Yeah, it's not a hero story, but you can say it's a hero's journey in a way. It's a hero's journey on his way to try to find honor, but not just honor, but to become a good person in a night. But like you said, his flaws are his biggest weaknesses, and although he's kind of set with these tasks and like he's on a knight's quest, which is so fun to see, like a knight go on one of their quests, which helps them become a knight. We never really see that too often in film, so it's a really fun thing to watch play out. But then watch as this knight like we said, he's a very flawed individual. He achieves and succeeds at many tasks, but not without making mistakes along the way.
I would say he doesn't succeed at tasks.
Well, he does.
I would say that he fails at his tasks.
Not every task.
I would argue that, but we don't want to spoil it right now. This is gonna be a spoiler free for like the first 5 minutes, and then we'll get into it. But the premise of the movie is that there's this knight. He's the nephew of King Arthur, and he wants to be a part of the Knights of the Round Table. And an opportunity arises in which some kind of mythical being, who's called the Green Knight, and it's this really large man who seems to be made of wood and earth, and he strides into the castle, and he offers someone the opportunity to join him in a game. And the game entails that if someone dares, they can strike a blow on him as hard as they can, and in 1 year time, the Green Knight will return the blow. And this is an opportunity that seems like it's a very questionable thing to do, and kind of a suicide type of conquest to try and undertake. But Dev Patel's character, Gaiwan, he really wants to prove himself to not only the king, but to the other knights, that he is worthy of being a knight, so he accepts the challenge. And that's the premise of the movie.
Yeah, and pretty much the trailer does a really good job just setting up that story without showing you really much of the journey at all.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of just shows you later on when he reaches the Green Knight at some point. But I think they did a terrific job enticing people with the trailer, because we went and saw it. It was a packed theater. We saw it Friday night, and this movie made $7 million for the kind of film that it is. That's a lot. And it was really great to be in a theater full of people experiencing a movie like this.
Yeah, it was great. And see, people seem to be reacting at the right things. And this movie, like, I think everyone who walked into that theater knew what they were getting into for the most part.
I hope they did.
If they're there opening night, except the people next to me, they were texting a couple of times with their phone. And I was like, what are you even doing
But
here?
I think people understand generally, if you're going to go see an A24 movie, you're kind of going to have a mind F at some point.
Yeah, and this movie is very strange. It's very weird, and it's very confusing at times. And there's a lot to it in terms of making you think. It's not a movie that you can just shut your brain off. You have to really pay attention and try to understand what's happening and what David Lowery is showing on screen, why he's showing things, and why Gawain is doing certain things, and why he's interacting with certain situations. And everything has meaning in this movie, and it's a dense film that probably will take a few viewings to fully appreciate completely.
Yeah, it's like a giant dream, but also a trip at the same time, like you're hallucinating on mushrooms or something like that, which actually is something, spoiler alerts, I think now we'll get into spoilers.
Yeah, let's get into it.
It's something that technically does happen in this film. You could say that he does take mushrooms and trip out at one point.
Yeah, he eats those mushrooms, and then he sees the Green Knight in the distance. So yeah, 100%.
So basically, Dev Patel plays this character, like you said, he's not a knight yet, but he's of royal blood. He's the nephew of King Arthur, and he's kind of lost in his ways. He's just kind of lives his days out for pleasures, and he's at the brothels with the woman there, and he's got that one
Essel,
the one woman he fancies the most, and he's a drunk. He's always drunk and walking around the castle, and always has to sneak into his quarters in the middle of the night.
He doesn't seem to have any knightly qualities, which is a problem, because knights, they have to live by chastity and honor and complete utmost faith. Like, he's out at the brothel getting drunk on Christmas Eve, so that's a sign that he doesn't think that faith is important in his life. So I think that his character is extremely flawed, and he seems to be, even though he's born into royal blood, he doesn't deserve to be a knight in any way.
Not yet.
And he's also never had an adventure which the king and queen remind him that he doesn't have any stories to tell, because he hasn't had a chance to create a story of his own.
Yeah.
And this movie is going to set that story up. But also, we meet his mother, who we learn pretty quickly, it's subtle, but she doesn't approve of his behavior. She wasn't happy that he was gone on Christmas Eve getting drunk in a brothel. And we also learn that she's a witch and practices witchcraft. And she is actually the one who summons the Green Knight at the round table. What happens is her and two other witches, they enter that temple and they perform some kind of
spell
or seance or whatever. And she writes the note which describes the rules of the game. And that note burns in midair, and then next moment, the Green Knight bursts into the round table room and enters. So she's the one who summoned the Green Knight, and the reason for this, we'll eventually learn, is this entire thing is something that I think she set up to as a test for her son to, first of all, go on an adventure and earn the right to be king, because he is next in line to be king. But then also, I don't think that she believes that her son is an honorable man who deserves to be king or deserves to be a knight. And so she needs to put him on this quest to earn those that privilege and change his ways so that he can become an honorable person.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Yeah, and she basically is the character of Morgan Le Fay from the poem, the original poem. That's the character who sets these events in motion, and she sets these events in motion in the film as well. She just happens to be the mother. I think that was adapted by Lowry as that is the...
Michael Lowry
as Mike the character Lowry. That, you know, creates the action going on. And so basically you could argue, how far would a mother go to bring direction to her son's life? Because like we said, he has no direction. He talks about wanting to be a knight, but he doesn't want to yet. He's kind of afraid to take those leaps. He's afraid to go on that adventure. He's afraid to embrace honor and courage and the knightly qualities that we're talking about. But the entire film and the journey he's set on is basically just a quest set by his mother to obtain not just honor, but other knightly qualities like courage.
But also, I think that because he was raised with such privilege, he seems like a spoiled kid.
Yeah.
He seems like he was definitely a spoiled brat because he doesn't care much about anything. He's a very selfish person. And so he doesn't have any of the qualities that a knight should have or a king should have. And so he needs to develop those. And what happens is, and what I really love about the filmmaking in this real quick is when you watch this movie, there's a lot of symbolism in terms of the production design of the sets. And so the crown of the king and queen, it has that circle emblem, like this ring on the back of the crown.
Like a halo.
Yeah, like a halo. And then when you're in the kingdom, like all the wind, there's lots of circles in the area. And then when you're in that temple of the witches, there are triangles in the windows and there are triangle flames. And now these have certain meanings. So a circle it represents the symbol of eternity and never-ending existence. And it also represents the notions of wholeness, perfection, the self, infinite, and timelessness. And so you could say that the circle represents the purity of the kingdom, of honor, of all the godly qualities that one would need to become a proper leader and ruler, whereas the triangle represents manifestation, enlightenment, revelation, and higher perspective, which represents the mother trying to bring enlightenment to her son to change him into the man that he has the potential to be. And so the symbolism in the movie is right front and center in the production design. They did a fantastic job with it.
Yeah, but the characters as well are fantastic, especially I love the relationship between Garwin and Essel, where Essel, again, she's of a lower class and she wants to be his lady. You know, before he departs on his mission or his quest to fulfill the agreement that he got into with the pact with the Green Knight, she asks, basically, can I be your lady? But he just responds with silence, which is more than enough that he has to say. And the thing with Gawain as well is I feel like he showed immense arrogance when he took up the contract with the Green Knight. And the deal was, you land a blow on me and I'll land a blow on you in 1 year's time. And he arrogantly, I think, chops his head off. Whereas I think for him, it would be a tremendous story. I'll be a knight after this. People will talk about me. He even says the line, like, remember what happened on this Christmas day. Yeah. And never forget it. And he chops his head off. Whereas all you had to do was land a blow on his arm or anything else, and he would have returned the same exact blow. But instead, he arrogantly chops his freaking head off. So now he has to get his head chopped off.
Yeah, so it was a suicide thing that he did. He was pretty much saying, giving permission to kill him. And the thing is, I believe that the proper way a knight would have handled that, or like a real knight would have handled that, would be to not behead the person, but to do something else to reject the challenge once they bent the knee. Because the Green Knight, we think it's going to be this epic fight between the two. He says this is like a challenge in his game, but then he literally drops his axe and drops his axe and then gets to his knee and holds his neck out to be chopped off, as in allowing Garwin to do that. And so It's set up that it's a test for Gawain, and he fails it essentially by beheading him. He set himself up to eventually have the destiny of being beheaded himself. Out of his arrogance for wanting the glory of beheading this mythical knight, the stories that people will sing about me will be tremendous, and he was not even understanding the repercussions of his action by beheading the knight.
Yeah, and Lowry even does a great job showing the culture of that story with that spinning wheel and, like, the puppet show. And at first, it's, like, it's glorious. He chops off this green knight and this monster, and he's a hero. But then later on, while he's on his quest, they show that he himself gets his head chopped off by the puppet.
Exactly. And Gawain, at this point, like you said, he rejects Essel when she asks him to be partners. He rejects her because she's not noble. She works in a brothel, and she's a peasant, essentially, and he's of noble blood, and it shows his character, this horrible characteristic of being just like a greedy, power-hungry person, where if he's going to marry someone, it has to be someone of noble blood or someone of royalty, like he does later on in the film when he marries a queen of another land. Because even though he clearly loves Essel, you can tell they love each other, but he's rejecting that love because he doesn't think that she belongs in his circle. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So he has really poor characteristics.
Yeah, and you can tell how afraid he is when it starts to come up on Christmas a year later and he has to set out on his quest. And
in terms of fear, I'm sorry. The whole movie, fear of death, I think, is the major theme of the movie. And the Green Knight represents death. And so Gawain has his biggest fear is of dying. Hence, that's the represented in the form of the Green Knight.
Yeah, and so that's something that he has to brace at the end of the story. And so he goes out on his quest, and he's basically faced with, what is it, four challenges?
Yeah, five, yeah.
And the interesting thing about it is when you watch closely, you really understand that it's all his mother's influence on each of these challenges, and she's kind of behind each one, you could tell. And the first one is when he basically gets tricked by that young peasant boy at that end of the at that battle scene, and he ends up getting robbed and tied up to that tree, which is his first task of trying to basically, you could say, escape
the test was generosity, an act of kindness. Remember the chapter?
He only gives enough.
So, well, first of all, he doesn't give anything. And the scavenger points him in the right direction. And it's his act of, first of all, not offering to pay, just saying my thanks is enough. And then after the scavenger begs him, then he gives him just one coin, which still isn't even close
Torrent
to enough. Tweren't enough. And so that's the test, the failing of the act of kindness, which is the title card that starts that chapter. It's like it's a generosity test, whereas he's showing that he's not a generous person, he's a very selfish person. And that's why, and also he doesn't seem like he should be a knight, because he's easily overpowered by those two people who seem to be untrained. They seem to be peasants as well, but they clearly overpower him very quickly, just at knife point. And if he was really worthy of being a real knight, he could have defended himself, whereas instead he cowered and then was shaking from fear of dying by their hand.
Yes, but he does eventually escape. So you could say at some point he does succeed at the test, like somewhat, while succumbing to his flaws.
I would just argue that escaping wasn't the test at all.
Yeah.
I would say...
No, I think you're right.
The generosity was the test.
You're definitely right.
And then that was the repercussion of his failure. Yeah.
But then his next test is when he stumbles across that young woman in the abandoned house who we can't tell is a ghost or a spirit or not, and she asks him to get her head out of the bottom of the spring, which a man, after killing her and beheading her, tossed in there. He wants him to go and grab it for him, but instead of being a noble knight and just going in to get it without any further questions, he asks, what will I get in return, which was a failure.
Yeah, and this is a test of chivalry, you could say, of wanting something in return for this favor, whereas, like you said, a noble knight would have done it without question. And so at first he fails the test, but then he eventually grabs the skull at the bottom of the pond, brings it back, and then as a reward for completing that task, his mother essentially rewards him by returning the axe to him inside of the house because it appears in the house.
So he succeeds, but he is, again,
he fails
flawed.
At first.
He flaws, yeah. So yeah. It's a flawed success.
And he kind of does it because he feels like, what else do I have to do, I think.
And then the next, basically, challenge that he has to do on his quest is he comes across that castle where Joel Edgerton's character is the lord of, and then also a woman who looks just like Essel, but is not Essel, is the lady of the land or the lady of the castle. And basically what his mother's doing is she used the likeness of Essel to tempt her son with this noble social class status woman who is comparable to him that he could have a relationship with. And so she tests him with chastity, you could say.
Mm-hmm. And she's even watching. There's that old lady with the long pigtails in the in the home, and she's constantly wearing that blindfold. And if you remember, his mother wore that blindfold when she performed the spell. So she's probably watching him through that woman.
You can tell because she rubs his face with her hand.
With a motherly hand, which you think is just like some crazy weird old lady at first. But then you realize, oh, that's his mother moving, like using that body as like a surrogate to interact with her son, even though he doesn't know it. And once again, he fails this test by giving into his sexual desires. And also, he used Essel's likeness. I mean, she used Essel's likeness for this woman. And also, you could say the woman's probably a witch as well, because she seems excited about witchcraft when she asks him, do you believe in witchcraft? And so, and because he responds, yes, I think that witchcraft is all around us, then you can understand that witchcraft is being used throughout this entire story from beginning to end. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But yeah, so he does feel they don't have sex, but she does, you know, toss a salad on top of the... The sacred belt that his mother sewed for him.
Huh.
And so he technically doesn't sleep with her, but he does pass this test, you could say, with a major flaw.
I don't think he passed it at all, I would say. Because she's married.
Okay, yeah, you're right. Yeah, so
she failed the test.
Yeah.
And then the next test, you could argue, has to do with the fox. Because the fox, when the fox tries to save him, he denounces the fox and attacks it to try and get it to run away. And this could be a test of friendship and loyalty in terms of the fox becoming a friend of his, but then him rejecting the fox and becoming disloyal to it.
I interpreted that the fox was his mother.
I don't think the fox was the mother. I would say the fox could represent probably the potential he has, because the fox seems to... Well, actually, so there's another...
But the fox tries to stop him, but he keeps going. So you could say it's an obstacle that he does pass.
Yeah, well, you could say that. And also, the fox did stop him from taking the easy route, because when the giants show up, and the giants of the land, they seem to be on this like trek across the land. And Gawain asks one of the giants, can I jump on your shoulder and take a ride up north? Like, taking the easy route. Like, I want to make this as easy as possible. Very unknightly of him to ask. And then the fox, I think, kind of, like, tells him, like, go away. He needs to do this on his own. So you could say it could be the fox.
I think the fox is his mother.
Protecting him.
And then it's up to him to, then when the fox is trying to stop him from getting into the boat to go see the Green Knight, to say that, no, I'm going to go face the Green Knight, so get away from me.
Yeah, got it. Yeah, I think you're right.
So you could say that maybe he's the only task that he fully passes on his own.
Yeah, you could say.
Without a flaw.
Yeah. I didn't think about that.
And then the final task is to meet the Green Knight for his death, which he does at first. He does approach the Green Knight, and he has to wait for the Green Knight to wake up on Christmas morning for him to receive the exact blow. But Gawain is very afraid of his death, and so he has that tremendous vision of his future, of if he ran away from his fate of being beheaded in the game, you could say, that he was enacted, that he is in with the Green Knight. And we have this amazing flash of a life of him being king, but he's plagued basically with the guilt and of running away from the Green Knight, not accepting his fate,
the
not
dishonor,
and also just
lying.
Living a lie.
Yeah.
He's living a lie now.
Because everyone thinks that he defeated the knight, you could say.
Yeah, and so throughout this entire sequence of him living decades and having children and marrying the princess.
And he takes Essel and his son away and just leaves her some money, and she'll never be his mother. So she takes a child away from his mother.
Yeah, so he gets everything he wants, but he's never happy.
Because he's living a life of dishonor and, like you said, living a lie. And you can say that has poisoned his mind and cursed him in a way of... And because he has not grown... He hasn't achieved what his mother wanted him to achieve with this path, where he didn't learn from his mistakes that he made, and he still fears death above everything and will do anything to avoid death. And because he never matured and understood the mistakes of his life and how he should have changed if he wanted to become a good king, he essentially became like if Dudley Dursley became a king.
Yeah.
Just a bad king, a horrible ruler, a bad husband.
Brought death to his entire people.
Yeah, there's no love in his life. He doesn't love his wife he eventually marries. And so because he never, I think the ultimate challenge was accepting death and eliminating his fear of it. Because he failed that, that was a precursor to him never ever changing into the person he should have become.
And also, when he does accept his fate after having this vision, what he does is he takes off that belt that his mother gave him, because the belt, she says, is magical protection, so no harm can come of you, and that's why he still has it on when he escapes and runs away from the Green Knight. But he knows that eventually, after having that life flash before his eyes, that if I keep this belt on, it's cheating. So I can't cheat and do this. I have to take this off and face this, and I finally will face my fears. And then the Green Knight, he says, I'm ready. And that's when the Green Knight says, you brave knight, calls him a knight. And you could say that that's his mother speaking through the knight to
him. Yeah, and then he says, off with your head, which I think is a joke.
Yeah.
I think what ends up happening is the knight spares him for passing the test, and then on his journey back, he will probably reflect upon the mistakes he made on the journey and change into a good person who will end up becoming a very good king,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, I think so too, because he doesn't have the selfish nature anymore. He doesn't have the guilt that he did in that vision he had. He'll probably end up marrying Essel and having a life with her, and she'll be his lady and his queen, and he'll probably have a much more happy and successful life as king and be a great king.
Yeah, I think that's how I see the ending. But I love how they kept it on.
Or you can have a fun way and he just gets his head chopped off.
Yeah, right after they just didn't show
but
it.
But you can argue that what would be the point of the whole entire task and journey if it was just to get your kid's head cut off if you're the mother?
What's the point of the story?
So it just really makes sense that he's going to survive and it was just all one test.
We did a great job explaining that.
Yeah, that was pretty solid.
That was a great explanation.
Yeah.
I'm impressed with ourselves.
Keep patting yourself on the back, guy.
I'm patting you in the back, too.
Thanks, man. Thanks. Appreciate it. But this movie was terrific. I had a great time watching it. But again, I think a lot of people, they can't handle the pacing of films like this because it is very slow at times. But that's the whole point. He's lulling you into this dreamlike state. And it's not for everybody, I think, in today's world and today's audiences, especially, like I said, with the Marvel Star Wars culture and superheroes, and we need fast-paced action, but I think it's truly a beautiful film.
Yeah, I think it's a fantastic movie. It was so refreshing and very original, and I love period pieces and medieval with, like, the surrealist quality and, like, mythical, magical stuff. Like,
yeah.
Such a great blend of genres. So much fun.
It was also very refreshing to watch a film or a huge production with medieval elements and themes without dragons.
Yeah, no dragons.
No dragons. It was nice. It was a nice change of pace.
And hey, there's a talking fox. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, he's a cute fox. Cute fox.
But I recommend this movie. If you like movies that are you have to think on them, movies that challenge you, movies that really stick with you and are not easy to watch, but really you have to pay attention to them, and you can get a lot out of this movie. So if you like those kinds of films that really challenge you as an audience member, this is right up your alley.
I've been still thinking about it 2 days later.
Yeah, me too, yeah.
2 days later.
Great score, too. Yeah. Fantastic music.
It was a Daniel Hart, I think, did it?
Mm-hmm.
Really good job.
Excellent job.
All right. Well, thanks so much for tuning into this bonus episode of The Green Knight. Stay tuned for an episode coming to you tomorrow, every Monday and Thursday on Raiders of the Lost Podcast, all platforms. Thanks so much for tuning in.
Take care.
Raiders of the Lost Podcast is a Mirror Image production. Sound mixing done by Jacob Kosler. Opening music by Chase Jackson.